Mark Ewart is a financial consultant and member of All Souls Church Unitarian in Washington, D.C., and he's written a book called The Generosity Path, from which I borrow the title for this morning's sermon. And I want to share with you the opening activity that Mark recommends for small groups seeking to explore what he calls the generosity path. Now, I won't actually make you do this morning since we are in a large group, not a small group, but imagine what this might feel like. So Mark, when he's getting together in the very first session as a way of introductions, he says, "All right, everybody get out your wallet." And that can be your purse, you know, whatever you carry your cash and your charge cards in. And then he says, "Now take your wallet and pass it to the person on your left." And then he says, "And now pass it to the left again." And then he says, "Let's take a few moments, even minutes of silence. And what does it feel like to hold someone else's wallet? And what does it feel like to know that while you're doing that, someone else is holding your wallet?" And what he's inviting us to think about is that we have such complex personal experiences and social histories behind the way we think about money, behind the ways we behave around money. And too often, messages around money are guilt and fear-based, but the invitation to walk the generosity path can also come from a place of abundance and inner freedom. From the Buddhist tradition, Lama Suryadas writes that giving brings happiness at every stage of its expression. We experience joy in forming the intention to give. We experience joy in the actual giving of something to someone who is in need. And we experience joy in remembering the fact that we have given. Similarly, from the Christian tradition, Henry Nouwen writes that every time I take a step in the direction of generosity, I feel a shift inside me, away from fear and toward love. Or from modern science, researchers at the University of British Columbia, as well as Harvard Business School, show that spending money on someone else, and Laura spoke a little about this earlier with Kiva, that spending as little as $5 a day on someone else has been shown to tremendously increase your happiness. Students who practice random acts of kindness were significantly happier than those who were not given such a task to do. In another study, college students were given money and directed to spend it either on themselves, as Laura said, on shoes or whatever, or to spend it what is called pro-socially, for some sort of social benefit to create social change. And participants who spent it pro-socially were happier at the end of the day than those who spent it on themselves. That happiness lingered much longer. Along these lines, if you're looking for a great resource to have honest conversations with the next generation, with children or grandchildren, nieces and nephews, or maybe even with your partner if you have trouble talking about money, I recommend the new book by the New York Times Your Money columnist, Ron Lieber, titled The Opposite of Spoiled. The Opposite of Spoiled: Raising Kids Who Are Grounded, Generous, and Smart About Money. It's an excellent book with a lot of best practices for having good, frank, honest, healthy conversations with your family about money. And when we think of those most generous givers in history, one word that comes to mind is philanthropy, which comes from the Greek word philia and anthropos, so lover of humanity. A philanthropist. And that etymology is at the core of what we aspire to be as Unitarian Universalists. We sometimes speak as UUism as a theologically liberal tradition. And when we say that, we mean liberal in the best sense of the word. So coming from that Latin word liber, meaning freedom, that with our freedom, we freely choose to be generous, open-hearted, open-minded, open of spirit, open to new ideas, and generous. According to our seven principles, we have incredibly high aspirations. We seek to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We seek to create justice, equality, and compassion in human relations, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And one of the first steps we can take in building the world we dream about is to take the next step on the generosity path, whatever that looks like in your life. is to take that one next step. That could look like a generosity of money, but it may also look like a generosity of time, of intelligence, of caring, or simply of presence to someone in need. Let me also hasten to add that Ewart emphasizes that the other side of the generosity path are that we go through seasons in our life when we need to receive as much as we need to give. And his touchstone for telling the difference is the acronym HALT, H-A-L-T. So he says, if you are finding yourself regularly hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, that's a sign you need to stop giving. You need to find some ways to feed your spirit so that later you can be in a place in which you have a generosity of spirit. It's really hard, you may have noticed, with your partner or your loved one or your family or your friends or your parents, that if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, my wife calls it when you're hungry and angry being hangry, so that if that's the place, it's hard to have generosity of spirit in that time of place. It's really easy to be short with someone. So feed yourself so that you can be generous later. That being said, to return to our spoken meditation that Danielle led us through earlier, we invited you to consider a time when someone offered you tremendous generosity, as well as a time when you were tremendously generous about something you felt passionate about or toward a need that you saw. And looking to the future, what are you passionate about today? What do you find yourself coming really alive around, really connecting to? That might be a sign of where you can walk down the generosity path. What gifts of time, intelligence, caring, money, or simply presence do you have to share? How might you be led to pay someone back based on something that came to mind in your meditation about generosity? Or what might you be called to pay forward to someone else? A mentor once told me that generosity is the beginning of wisdom. And I think what he meant is that the prefix of that word generosity is gen, it's the same, it means birth. Think about the word generative. So that as you begin to orient yourself toward generosity, you orient yourself toward what can I share with the world? What is generativity for me that I can share of my gifts with the world? And if communities like UUCF have fed you, comforted you, stood in solidarity with you and others in times of injustice, the invitation is to give generously so that together we might do even more in the future for others. As I once heard a speaker say, many organizations like us that work for social change, maybe we make a mistake in calling ourselves nonprofits. It makes it seem like, oh, we don't need money. We just, you know, do it on a shoestring and a prayer, right? Or maybe not a prayer. Anyway, we call ourselves, nonprofits. Maybe we should call ourselves social profits because we're not a for-profit. We're not in it for money, you know, like cabaret, but we're in it to create social change. And we do value your time and your generosity of spirit and your generosity of wealth so that we can create social change to work for more connection, compassion, diversity, and justice in this world and in our immediate community. We have the potential to do so much more, even beyond the significant amount we're already doing. I should also say that one joke about the genre of sermon that I'm preaching this morning is that instead of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, this is a sermon on the amount. And many ministers actually do preach a sermon on the amount every year. You may have noticed that I don't tend to do that because I think what contributes most to whether or not any individual or household gives to this congregation is not whether or not I preach a sermon on the amount. It's whether or not you perceive value in this community week in and week out, similar to what Elaine and others were speaking about. At the same time, I do think it's valuable to occasionally take a step back and talk about the value of practicing generosity, but I also wanted to speak explicitly about stewardship and generosity. That word stewardship means keeper of the hall, like a steward, so that, you know, we are a keeper of this hall that is an investment in the future of Unitarian Universalism in Frederick. And I wanted to speak specifically about generosity and stewardship this year because we really are at a turning point in the history of this congregation. especially for those who are newer here. Who's been here since the very founding of this congregation? Anybody that's here this morning? We have a few that are still around. They are older and probably wisely not here this morning, but I can point them out to you, and they have some really incredible stories to tell. But to briefly trace our history, especially for those who are newer, this congregation was formed 54 years ago in 1961. That's the same year that the Unitarians and the Universalists merged together to form the Unitarian Universalist Association. And at that time, this congregation met on the second floor over the Colonial Music Shop on East Patrick Street. Through the years, other locations included the South End Civic Association and the YMCA. That was during a period of what is known as doing church out of the trunk of your car, so you're constantly having to set up and take down and very nomadic. During much of that time, for almost three decades, this congregation was almost completely lay-led, with the exception of two quarter-time ministers in the early 80s. So at quarter-time, you can really just be here on Sunday morning and not even every Sunday morning. So we have a tremendous legacy of self-reliance and lay leadership that got us to where we are and continues to really be a huge impact in this congregation. But what I hear from those people, especially who have been here for decades, is they were starting to get tired, and they were also starting to get a sense of, we need professional leadership that can help catalyze us to go to the next stage of what the potential is here in Frederick for Unitarian Universalism. And in 1989 and into the early 90s, two other quarter-time ministers were called to serve this congregation. And at the beginning of that same period, in 1989, this congregation bought the house that still stands at 1301 Mater Avenue. Who was here then? Who remembers Mater Avenue? So quite a few of you. So if you're driving by 1301 Mater, you can have a little pilgrimage to UU history. We then soon jumped to a half-time minister in 1993 and to this congregation's first full-time minister in 1994. As the congregation grew beyond the 70-seat capacity of Mater House, we moved to two Sunday services and then to Rosenstock Hall at Hood College. Who was here then? All right, a few more of you. Finally, in 2003, we dedicated and moved into this building. But starting in the mid-2000s, we went through a period in which we had four ministers in pretty rapid succession, and the last of those four ministers was only at half-time, which can provide a lot less services to the congregation. Three of them were intentional short-term interims. Nevertheless, four ministers in a pretty short time period is a lot of transition. So structurally, also, for this congregation, moving back to a half-time minister for 2 years was like turning back the clock a decade to 1993 when this congregation, 2 decades to 1993 when this congregation hired its first full-time minister, or first half-time minister, and then the next year, half full-time. And my sense is that that halted trajectory, that sense of unmet potential, was why about 4 years ago in this congregation was discerning around what do we want our next step to be after the expiration of this 2-year contract ministry, was that people stepped forward and said, we want a full-time minister, and fully funded a 3-year pledge drive that was a dual purpose. We'll both fully fund the current operating budget and pay a special 3-year full-time minister fund to make up the difference so that we could call a full-time minister. And that minister turned out to be me, fast forwarding. But I never would have come to this congregation if you weren't, and nor would many other ministers, if you were just offering half-time or quarter-time ministry. So I'm incredibly grateful for those who took a huge leap of faith and generosity of spirit and wealth to make that possible and to help return us to our previous trajectory. At that time, I was beginning to move, 3 or 4 years ago, I was starting to move from the 9 years I spent as a minister in progressive congregations to affiliating with the Unitarian Universalist Association, and we happily met in the middle and dovetailed. 3 years later, I passed the UUA's Ministerial Fellowship Committee and will walk across the stage, as Sandy mentioned, at the UU General Assembly in Portland at what is known as the Service of the Living Tradition, which celebrates all the different levels of ministerial transition. And 3 years later here at UUCF, we're in what feels like a new day with a bright future, as Tibby so eloquently spoke about earlier. And as that 3-year minister's fund is set to expire in June, that's the turning point and the challenge and the invitation. is to fully integrate that three-year minister fund into the ongoing operating budget as just our regular, normal baseline. And so what we've asked people to do is to consider, if you gave to the full-time minister fund, can you continue giving at that level and perhaps increase 10%? If you've never pledged before, maybe consider pledging for the first time. Or if you have just been pledging and didn't give or weren't here when we did the full-time minister fund, consider increasing 10%. Or maybe some of you who aren't repelled by the guide that the UUA gives will consider and find that as a framework that might potentially inspire you to significantly give, increase what you give. But certainly we're grateful for whatever you can give, and we are 100% supported by your donations. And looking at the long arc of UUCF's history from the vantage point of the middle of my third year as your minister, it feels like we're back on the right track as a congregation, and the trajectory on which we're heading is incredibly exciting. That bright future, though, is about so much more than just what I bring to this congregation. It's about the collaborative ministry that we share around religious education and music, fellowship, and social and environmental justice, and so much more. As we grow from what is called a pastoral-sized congregation, that when your average worship attendance is between 50 and 150, you're what is called a pastoral-sized congregation, and basically my calendar can be the congregation's calendar. But we've grown beyond that. That's why we moved to two services, to what is called, we're in between, when you get to 225 plus, you're what is known as a program-sized congregation, so such that there are all these programs, and again, it becomes about so much more than what I can hold. In between, if you're curious, is called an awkward-sized congregation, because you have more people than I can have a direct relationship with, which is about 150, is what anthropologists tell us, that I can know by name and missed when absent, but we're not big enough to support the programs that you need to integrate all those people, so that's why we took the risk of going ahead and moving to two services to create the infrastructure to move us to 225 plus, which we occasionally reach. You know, there's Sundays when we have about 180 plus in our late service, and we still have 30 to 50 in the early service, and we're there. We're not, you know, that our average is getting up there toward a program-sized congregation. And I'm increasingly aware, again, of how grateful I am for all that happens in this congregation that I have little to no direct involvement with. And that's the only way it can be if we're going to continue to grow. So I'm grateful for the leadership so many of you provide. And as I told the search committee, you know, we're really in this together, and I plan to be here 7 to 10 years minimum. Now that I've been here almost 3 years, 7 years is starting to feel like really soon. So I'm not going anywhere, and I'm grateful to be here with all of you. So as we look to our next 3 years here at UUCF and beyond, I invite you to consider your responses to what Peter Block calls powerful questions. He's a writer and thinker around community. He writes, "What gifts of time, intelligence, money, caring, or simply presence do you hold that you are willing to bring to this community?" If there are ways that you'd like to be involved that you're not sure how of, or you're just not sure how to get involved but would like to be more involved than you are, let me know, and I'm glad to find a time for us to sit down in my office and talk about some of the leadership needs or some of the things you may want to bring to this congregation that we haven't even considered. He says further, "What is the commitment that you bring to this congregation? Just how valuable do you want your involvement with this community to be? How valuable an experience do you plan for your involvement to be?" To think about your level of commitment. Finally, I'll conclude with the following words adapted from a congregational pledge that invites us to reflect on how each one of us is vital and shapes the beloved community that this congregation is and that it can be. "My congregation is composed of people like me." Of course it is. What else could it be made of? I help make it what it is. It'll be friendly if I am. It will be kind and forgiving and welcoming if I am those things. Its seats will be filled if I help fill them. It will do great work if I work. It will make generous gifts to many causes if I am a generous giver. It will bring others into its worship if I invite and bring them. It will be a congregation of loyalty and love, of fearlessness and faith, of compassion, charity, and mercy, if I, who make it what it is, am and practice these things. Therefore, I dedicate myself to being all the things that I want my spiritual home to be. That's the sort of pledge we're invited to take as we consider the level of commitment that we want to have to this congregation now and in the future. Again, I'm grateful to be on this journey with all of you, and I look forward to continuing with you on this path toward greater generosity. Generosity of heart, generosity of mind, generosity of money, generosity of spirit. I want to be known, us to be known as a congregation that is crazy generous in every way, in every meaning of that word. May it be so, and blessed be. And I should say this again when there are more people here, but though I'm super grateful for all of you for being here, you get extra special points. For whatever that's worth, all right? I invite you to consider, we're in a great place as a congregation, and I invite you to consider if you have friends or family or colleagues who would find this to be a meaningful community, that study after study shows that 75 to 90% of people who ever come to a congregation and stay, it's because of what is known as elbow evangelism. It's because somebody says, come with me. And so consider that if you have friends or family or colleagues who would find this to be a meaningful place. And whatever you do and however you go from this place, we hope that you'll continue your journey walking in love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And know that whatever taste or touch you've had of hope, of love, of peace or joy in this time and place, that goes with you out into the world. So live boldly, live generously, and live with thanksgiving. Go in peace.